back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talevi, and tackling your questions this evening are Devin Schutz from the Robur Group and Dale Hutchison from APSA Asset Management. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at Business Day TV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Devin, Dale, good to see you both there this evening. Dale, if I may start with you, not a good day for the JSE today, although I suppose we can take some comfort from the fact that we're not actually officially in a bear market yet, while the US very much is. The S&P 500 opened in a bear market, so it's down 20% from its highs. Do you think this is the last gasp of the sell-off, or do you think that the inflation numbers that came out of the States on Friday, inflation rate of 8.6%, are enough to keep the sell-off pressure well intact, as it were?
Well, I certainly think I'd be hesitant to say this is the last sell-off that we'll see. I think we've got obviously expectations now that potentially, you know, with increased pressure by on the Fed to raise rates more aggressively, that the US can get pushed into a recession. And it's in that context that things can be pushed low, because we start to then potentially go down the path of earnings disappointing. And at the moment, it's certainly a ratings story that's downgrading this market and pushing it lower. But when that starts to translate into earnings, things can even head further lower. Mm. And I think it might be a bit early to be calling this the bottom or close to the bottom.
Devin, what's your sense, and specifically for South African shares, because we haven't had it as badly as the US market. To some extent, maybe we've been shielded from some of the resources stocks, although we'll get to Thungela, which came off a lot today. And you've had a weaker rand, which has also propped up some of the rand hedges. But do you think, you know, SA Inc. suddenly came into its own a couple of months ago, and we've seen it sell off steadily. Do you think there's worse to come?
Look, I mean, I think when you look at South Africa, we have been spared a lot of the heavy selling that some of the bigger markets like the tech-heavy NASDAQ has had. I'm not sure if that persists, Julieta. Honestly, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it, right? But I think there were some tailwinds that were lucky for us. So you mentioned one of them, the rands. You mentioned the fact that we are a commodity-producing nation, which definitely helped and almost gave us a kind of a safe haven status for a while, which was just incredible considering, you know, 2 years ago people were asking if South Africa was even investable.
Yeah.
And so we've held up well, but I really do agree with Dale. I think the focus of the markets is going to shift to the earnings season. And, you know, the expected average forward earnings on the S&P is coming in at 13% growth. I would be surprised if we get anywhere near that. I think we're going to see closer to flat earnings as growth slows, possibly even some negative surprises there. So it's going to be bumpy. I mean, it has been volatile this year. Investors have really had to, you know, grin and bear it. But I don't think it's quite over yet. And the Fed's in a difficult position, right? You know, it hasn't been this way where growth is slowing and the Fed is having to tighten monetary policy. They haven't had to do that since the 80s. And so we're in a really tough position, and it's likely they're going to put the US into some sort of recession. I guess the question is, how deep is that? And then the knock-on effect to earnings that we were chatting about.
Yeah. I mean, certainly real interest rates are deeply negative in the States. So, you know, from where they are now, and you're looking at raising rates compared to where the inflation rate is, I mean, there's this yawning chasm between the present interest rates. I mean, even the long bond yields at 3.2%. So, yeah, a very tricky position indeed. If we talk about some of the resources stocks, there's a question, and I mentioned Thungela, and it said they announced a trading update, which looked excellent. They came out with one this morning. The price dropped by 10% today. What's the reason for this? Dale, is it Transnet? Is Transnet really, can Thungela pin all its present share price woes on Transnet, or were there other factors there?
Well, I do think it probably missed in terms of volumes. Obviously, as you point out, it's struggling to get volumes out on the rail network. That's certainly weighing on this share, but it was probably into a market today where, you know, where global growth fears also will weigh on commodity demand, and it wasn't the only commodity stock that was lower. So that probably was part of the equation. But I certainly think, you know, coal prices have been exceptionally high. Probably probably will remain high given obviously some of the energy shifts we've seen in Europe. But I think, you know, they are unfortunately not benefiting to the extent they would have liked because of rail constraints.
Yeah, I mean, they must be tearing their hair out. You know, they talk about export saleable production for the first half was 6.1 million tonnes, which is 14% lower than the first half last year. They're all talking to Transnet Freight Rail, and it's not just Thungela, it's any major bulk exports of commodities in South Africa. Devin, do you think actually this has given you a buying opportunity for Thungela, which was the stock of 2021 and 2022 until now? So, I would find it difficult to understand if people had radically revised down their forecasts. I think the forecasts were about 270 Rand a share, the target price for Thungela shares, and if they're trading at about 220 odd Rand, do you think actually now might be an opportunity to pick some up where you weren't able to a few weeks ago? Or would you think that there might be a bit more pressure on the share price?
Jeanette, I think, you know, demand, I agree, is probably going to remain sticky for coal for the foreseeable future. But the Transnet constraint persists, you know, unless we see dramatic reform there. And, you know, there's been a bit of talk, but virtually zero action. It's just an absolute travesty that, you know, when you're running a cyclical resource company and the prices triple in a year, you can't get that off to market. It's just... it feels criminal to me. So, yeah, these guys are constrained. Volumes are down. Value is up. But, you know, do you buy the dip? I'm worried because the market was so disappointed on this that it could be a structural trend and there may be some more short-term weakness.
Okay. And just sticking with commodity companies, and Dale, you mentioned, you know, it wasn't the only commodity company that came under pressure. This viewer says, what companies can I look into if I'm interested in investing in copper and gold? Would you want necessarily exposure to either of those two metals at this point? And if you did, which companies would you buy those metals through?
Well, gold's easier because you've got the pure gold players of Goldfields and Harmony and Anglo Gold in the South African market. And I think if you're buying those stocks at the moment, you're probably buying them as some sort of safe haven inflation type protection type of stock. I'm a little always a bit cautious of that. Normally, when everybody's saying that, it's normally time to be taking your profits. But certainly, I think there is some support for, you know, in this risky environment at the moment, gold might offer some defensive qualities. On the copper side, probably a little harder because your diversified miners of, you know, BHP, Anglo's, and Glencore are your copper exposures in the South African market. And obviously, they have other commodities, you know, in particular iron ore and in Anglo's and BHP's case, obviously some coal exposures and other metals if you start looking at Glencore. So, yes, I mean, those are the names I pay for those for copper. As copper stands at the moment, you know, you're going to have the same concern about global growth and in particular China as to whether you think copper is a commodity that's going to see further upside. You'd have to say it's certainly not at a price level which makes me think copper's at the bottom of the cycle. And that means there's downside risk.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting one because on the one hand, you have the one sort of countervailing force is that it's not called Dr. Copper for nothing. So it's a benchmark of the health of the global economy. And so, yes, if there's not much demand from China and key sort of infrastructural developing states where they consume a lot of copper, that's going to affect the price. But then on the other hand, you have this imperative towards this green revolution where you're having to retrofit buildings and all sorts of things. And copper is a key ingredient in moving towards greener technologies. So, I mean, Devin, could you say at this point which force will win out? Or is it just kind of going to keep copper price flat? And also the gold price, the thesis would be, as Dale said, you know, it's a safe haven in troubled times, but it hasn't done any of the things that we would have hoped it might in the last couple of months. So it's just gone nowhere, really. So, I mean, would you want to actually look at copper and gold at all at this point?
Yeah, for me personally, gold's been disappointing. I mean, it very seldom kind of plays out the way you think in the short term. You know, an inflation hedge, it hasn't been up till now, and we've got inflation. So you know, go figure there. I think I'm more constructive on copper. I don't think it's a slam dunk at these levels, but I do think the long-term structural trends for it are strong. I think there's fair tightness in that market as well. The Chinese growth trajectory is concerning. They're trying to manage their way out with their COVID policies and their elective conference and all of those things. But I think long-term that there's a nice underpin there. And as Dale said, you're going to get that exposure on the JSE through a diversified miner, which is probably our preferred resource play at the moment, where these, you know, single resources are just so volatile and difficult to call. So, yeah, you know, looking at the likes of BHP is where we would be.
Okay, I was going to ask you if you had a preferred player, because you have BHP, you've got Glencore, you've got Anglo. So BHP is where you would prefer. Dale, do you have a favorite amongst those companies?
Yeah, I mean, BHP is probably the safer bet at this point in time in some respects. But I do think if we do see China picking up a bit, I'd probably be quite comfortable in a more geared play called Glencore or even Anglo's.
Okay. And Dale, I mean, Devin said he was disappointed by gold's performance. Do you have any gold companies that you would want to invest in, or would you look at the metal, you know, if you were going to be pushed to put some money into gold, would you just look at a new gold ETF, for example?
I'd probably go with something like an Anglo Gold. Obviously, Gold Fields is subject to that transaction, which the market clearly wasn't happy with in terms of the pricing they're paying for it. So for now, I'd probably err on the side of caution and go with an Anglo Gold if I had to.
Let's move to financials. And there's a question on whether financial and bank stocks are a bargain at these levels. Can they now be a buy at these prices? And as for stocks, this viewer wants to know about all four of them: Standard Bank, Nedbank, FirstRand, APSA. Also financials, he's talking about 91, Sanlam, Old Mutual, Momentum, etc. Devin, starting with you, do you think banks are a bargain at these prices? They certainly were one of the strongest performers up until a couple of weeks ago. They haven't emerged unscathed from the sell-off, but do you think they're worth buying?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the sector, Giulietta, it is one of the safer places to be as an investor, I would argue. I think that they've managed those credit loss ratios really well coming through COVID and everything that's been after that. I wouldn't expect fireworks from them, but I think as we're in this rising rate environment and that endowment effect comes through, I think the banks are going to be very consistent kind of earners and very nice dividend payers. So I think from a total return perspective, I think investors will be adequately rewarded. I think you've got to be a little bit cautious on the life insurers still. We're seeing massive claims coming through there still that they're going to have to stomach. So you've got to really wade through that and be quite careful. I think what is an interesting space, you know, call it within the financials, is in the asset managers, particularly from a yield play. You know, we've got Coronation there and Signia now that are really paying chunky dividends. They've got these asset bases that, you know, bar when you have market sell-offs like we've had this year, are growing. And, you know, sometimes they're able to charge performance fees on top of that. So there's quite a bit of earnings visibility there, I would argue. So, yeah, I think, you know, always be selective in that. But I would favor, to the viewer's question, banks over life insurers, definitely.
Do you have any particular banks that you fancy?
So at the moment, from a valuation perspective, we think APSA is looking pretty good. We favor Standard Bank for kind of geographic exposure. The ROE on FirstRand has always been good, but we think there is some risk that you're overpaying for that quality at the moment. So, yeah, for us, Nedbank's coming right, but it's taking a bit of time. It would be Standard Bank first and APSA second in the sector.
Okay. Dale, how about you?
Yeah, I pretty agree with everything that Devin has said. And ironically, my top picks are actually my fund, APSA and Standard Bank. So I'm with him on that. I do think FirstRand is, as he says, is seen as a bit of a quality play, but Aldermore in the UK does worry me a little bit. Nedbank's not expensive either, so I think it's probably one of the sectors that you can play from a bit of a sector point of view, and you'll probably be okay. So yes, but I agree with his picks as well.
None of you have mentioned Capitec, which is quite interesting. Is it just because, you know, Capitec has done exceptionally well in terms of building up its business, but it trades at a price-to-book ratio that is way above the other banks? I mean, and they haven't really had maybe the declines that you might expect in a very expensive company in this particular market environment. Or do you just, if you have Capitec shares, you just hang on to them given the strength of the underlying business? Dale.
Okay. I mean, I do think the underlying business is still likely to perform very well. And, you know, on that basis, I think you probably can hold on. But being the high multiple that effectively trades on, in a sell-off, you know, there is a little bit more risk in a stock like that in my mind. So for now, I'm probably sitting on the sidelines there, but I'm not trying to discount the fact that I do think they're executing very well.
Yeah. Devin, do you have any thoughts on Capitec?
Look, I mean, I think they've had the advantage over those other big four we were mentioning because they just didn't have a lot of the legacy systems and technology that those big groups did. So they're able to build a much leaner and meaner banking model. And, you know, to their credit, they've done fantastically well. Yeah, the valuation always worries me. It's one of those stocks that, you know, is expensive and remains expensive. Very difficult to deploy new capital into. But I think if you're an investor, you stay put.
Okay. And just keeping with your point there about the dividend yield, so is that enough? So even though there might be further declines in the market, would you say that the kind of dividends that you're going to get paid out from all of the banks, I think it's kind of blanket, is enough to compensate for any declines that you might see in the capital point at which you enter any of those bank stocks at this stage of the game?
Look, I think you've got to be mindful of your entry point still. You know, a 5% dividend yield will only shield you so much.
Yeah.
But I do think it gives you a bit of margin for error in terms of what you're paying there. But I think you've got to look at them holistically.
Yeah. Okay. Dale, there's a question, a very interesting question on averaging down, which I suppose to some people is the ultimate no-no, and for others it is what you do in this kind of a market. Mm-hmm. But the question is, given the prevailing circumstances and the slump in stock prices, does one be patient and average down on one's stocks in the future for the long term? In other words, buy stocks at cheaper prices than you would have maybe a couple of months ago. Do you think that's wise? If you still believe in a share and you believe in the prospects for a company and it is trading 20% lower now than it was a few months ago, is this a no-brainer, or do you have to be, what are the arguments that go through your head at this point?
Well, I mean, I think you always continually have to assess, has the world changed in which you've made that previous investment decision? And if you still get to the same conclusion that this is an attractive entry point, you know, you probably will buy it. But you also always have to be assessing, well, what are my alternatives? Where else is there value in the market? So I agree that, you know, averaging down makes sense if the investment case holds and you suddenly there aren't other attractive investments that look even more juicy. But otherwise, I'd always assess at a point in time when you're making the investment and just the theme of averaging down, I think you could get yourself caught there.
Okay. Devin, your thoughts?
I like what Dale said. I think just to add to that, you know, if you are adding to a losing position, you've got to be very careful what that overall exposure is within your portfolio. And you don't want to be concentrated in a stock that is falling in case you don't get that recovery. So I think managing your exposure to a single counter within a portfolio is an important part of risk management.
Yeah, because this is, I mean, you see tales of, and I think the 91 Value Fund, John Bickard's position on platinum stocks is a classic example of how people can say, oh, they've lost their minds, and they just bought these platinum shares as they fell. And then when there was a re-rating in the platinum shares, it was phenomenal for them. But then the platinum, the weighting that they had in their portfolio was
another problem.
You have another problem, then you've got to sell
it. Big in the portfolio, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so, and then you look at someone like that, do you think, okay, well, if, you know, I understand that theory, I'm going to do what they do, or can you get caught badly? I mean, do you have to be a proper, I suppose, a value investor where you're absolutely 100% sure about your thesis and you're sticking with it through thick and thin?
Well, I just think... Sorry, go for it, Dale.
Go for it.
Okay, well, I just think you always have to reassess, because unfortunately, we all get things wrong, and you could have got your initial investment case wrong. And therefore, you know, to continue to average down, you could just be throwing
good money after bad.
Mm. And I think that's the risk you run. So always make a fresh assessment. Try and not have the biases that, you know, I've invested here before, you know, I still believe in it. Try and look at it objectively, all I can say.
Okay. Yes, probably the hardest lesson in stock market investing is looking at things objectively. Then just sticking with, I jumped between themes, but there was a question on Discovery. I know we were talking about the financial services sector, and actually neither of you mentioned Discovery. And the question is, I'd like the panel's view on the price at current levels. Any particular reason, Devin, you were saying that you would probably stay away from the life insurers. Would you include Discovery in that bundle of stocks, or are they kind of on their own in terms of financial services companies?
Yeah, they got a bit more going for them, don't they? They've got the short term, the bank, the investing, as well as the life insurance, medical, and so I think you know, they're almost kind of a diversified play in that regard. The same applies in their life insurance book, but we're pretty constructive on the Discovery investment thesis. We think there's some exciting prospects with that Ping An partnership. We think the potential savings from the Vitality chassis that they outsource to other countries and other companies, and they earn some of the actuarial profits, we think that's got a lot of long-term legs. They're still going to get the bank going. That's burning some cash there. But we back that team to do it. So we think at these levels, probably a little bit above where we would like to be buying it, But we think for long-term investors, which I hope most of the viewers are, that there's some significant growth opportunities in that stock.
Dale, your thoughts, quickly?
Yeah, I probably agree with Devin. You know, it's very much about the long-term and execution on what has been quite an innovative business and management. You know, that have done a pretty good job at seeing opportunities where others haven't. So I do think, you know, it's a long-term investment. At this point in time, probably happy to be on the sidelines for now. As he pointed out, the space is somewhat challenged, albeit that they've got a few different dynamics to it. And I think the whole SA dynamic in terms of, you know, employment, etc., you know, that remains a bit of a headwind for them, obviously on the medical aid side, etc. So for now, I'm probably happy to be a little bit on the sidelines.
Yeah, okay. There was a question that came through on Motus, and it was our first question, and I'm terribly sorry to our very regular viewer who sends us these questions. So I shall pass it on to Bright so he can answer that tomorrow night. Getting to your stock picks very quickly, in the less than a minute for the both of you, Devin, what would you be looking at this evening?
Sure. This is one we've been watching for a while, and with things happening in the market since that inflation print out of the US on Friday, It's come into range. It's the iShares 20-year Treasury bond ETF. TLT is the code. And, you know, U.S. Treasuries have been absolutely crushed this year. They're down. They've fallen with equities, which is the first time we've ever seen that happen. We think that there's a tactical opportunity for recovery to happen there. I think what you will see, you know, once the risk-off environment abates, these are likely to recover faster than equities, and the total return that they can give you with that yield and the log modern debt, you know, 3.3% plus some nice capital uplift, we think it's one investors could look at that doesn't come around too often.
Okay, yeah, as you say, crushed from their highs. Dale, how about you?
I picked British American Tobacco, obviously a defensive stock in a challenged market. It's still on a forward PE of under 10 on a dividend yield of over 6%. Management's engaged in share buybacks. They put up that an updated trading performance last week, which, you know, still meant everything, and they maintained their guidance. Everything still seems to be on track. Just seems like a pretty safe, comfortable place to be sitting in this market.
Yeah, and it certainly hasn't come off to the extent that everything else has in the last couple of days. Dale, Devin, thank you very much for joining us this evening and sharing your insights. Nice to chat to you both. Devin Shute is from the Robea Group. Dale Hutchison is from APSA Asset Management. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.